Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I am Mark Cook, along with Scott Reynolds and the man bun himself, Trevor Sikkema. And fellas, we thought last week was bad. This one might have been even a little worse.
Why? Because they had a chance to win at the end?
Right. That's yeah. They literally snatched the opportunity for victory away from themselves. And,
yeah.
And you know, that's always the question. You guys tell me real quick. You're a fan of Kansas State. You're a Gator team, Gator fan, Florida State fan.
I'm a Will Greer fan.
Wouldn't you rather your team just get blown out than to tease you? Tell me. I wonder about that. And
no.
I go back and forth on it.
I don't know.
Really?
No, I'd rather keep it close.
Really?
I mean, a loss is a loss, whether it's by 1 point or whether it's by 40.
Yeah, but if they're getting blown out like they were against
Arizona
yeah. You're like, okay, well, game over. You know, yeah. You're already planning on what you're doing the next, you know, later in the afternoon.
That is true.
Really, they only lost by 5 points, technically. That was a close
game.
Again,
teasing you.
Yeah.
Teasing Buccaneer fans.
Yes.
Yesterday was worse, though.
Nobody likes to tease.
Because I really thought they're going to win this game when they came back from 11 points
yeah,
down.
Yeah, so did I.
I did not. I honestly,
you never thought they were going to win?
No, I had no illusions.
Oh, wow.
I had no illusions.
Well,
I thought they were going to win.
I was actually watching the game with my daughter, Ellie, and she was all excited. You know, she saw Mike Evans score the touchdown, and I said, whoa, hold on there, Missy.
Yeah.
Let's slow down to the high fives now.
Score too soon.
Yeah. That's really what happened. No, I had no illusions the Bucs defense was going to give up, you know, a drive. And really, the Bucs defense did rise up a bit, but the thing is it didn't really matter because Adam Humphries fumbled.
Yeah,
deep in their
territory, heck,
and then on 3rd and 9, I think there was 5 or 6 missed tackles on their end around play, and that just pretty much nailed it.
Is there more of a reliable player that could have let you down in that way? Like, come
on. Yeah, I know.
You know, that's not your day, or maybe not your season when Adam Humphries fumbled.
That's what I'm saying.
Or maybe the first time as a
like to lose.
Yeah.
You know?
He had a fumbled punt, but I think he recovered.
He recovered.
Cam Brate drops four passes like
against
3 weeks
Patriots.
Ago
yeah,
where they should have won. You know, Adam Humphries fumbles for them to lose on
Vernon
Sunday.
Vernon Hargraves misses a tackle.
Vernon Hargraves can't. Actually, Vernon
I
Hargraves.
Know.
He had a good
I
game.
Saw you pumping
Zero
him up on Twitter.
Zero missed tackles this week.
Yeah. Well,
zero catches allowed either.
It's true.
Right?
It's true.
Yes.
Zero turnovers. Zero interceptions.
True.
Had one pass breakup.
He doubled his season
total
breakups.
They listed him officially with 2 pass breakups in the game book.
Really?
So
I guess the 2 incompletes that went his way. Don't you have to, like, touch the ball to call it a pass breakup?
No, all you got to do is put your finger up and wag it.
Yes.
And they'll, like, give you the pass breakup.
Well,
they'll
be
like, oh, wow, he must
have
done something.
So, like, if you kind of, like, do this with your hands and kind of slice
the air
right. And then wag your finger, then
you're good.
Then it's a pass breakup.
You're good.
Even if it's an overthrow.
So, Grimes, okay, so, like, the interest, the back and forth really for the last year or whenever Hargraves has been really struggling was, well, Brent Grimes has been so good on the other side, they're not even throwing him the ball. On Sunday, Hargraves
he got targeted.
On Sunday, Hargraves played in the slot.
Yes,
and they were like, "All right, well, there's not a guaranteed completion with 28 on one side, so I guess we'll just test both sides of the field now." And
right.
Brent Grimes gave up 4 out of 5 targets for like 70 yards.
Yeah, Deontay Thompson had a day.
Oh my gosh, man!
Well, the day that he had though was really.
You know he scored
by
earlier
that
this
last
year.
Last catch that he had though.
He scored earlier this year against the Bucs because he was on the Bears.
That's right.
He was on the Bears and scored the touchdown
in
the corner over Vernon Hargraves.
So he lives to play the Buccaneers.
Him and I tweeted this yesterday. Case Keenum, Deontay Thompson. How is this possible?
They're the kryptonite.
Well, guys, you can feel better about this defense because, I mean, we saw what Adrian Peterson and the Cardinals did last week against this team. And, I mean, they went out and did that against the Rams yesterday.
Yeah.
No, they didn't.
No?
No, not at
all.
Yeah,
Peterson had 133 yards.
No, he didn't.
13 or something.
21.
Yeah.
21.
He had 21 yards.
And the Cardinals scored 0 points. And Carson Palmer broke his arm.
Oh.
Why does he always get hurt after he plays the Buccaneers?
Yeah, that's a good
Have you
point.
Noticed that? Like last year?
Did he?
Whenever
did
it was.
Are you really thinking that Drew Stanton isn't going to beat this Buccaneer defense last week if he would have been
No,
playing?
He would have.
No.
He would have.
He's the Case Keenum of the Cardinals.
Of Drew Stanton.
Yes.
We did see a new wrinkle. We saw Mike Smith make an adjustment in the second half. He said, well, we're sure it's not going to get there with 4 guys, so we're going to rush only 3, and we're going to play a 3-3-5 alignment because that's why you saw Kendall
Big
Beckwith.
Big 12 football, baby.
There you go.
Big
Kendall
12
Beckwith,
football.
Levante David, Quan Alexander on the field at the same time. And then you had an assortment of defensive linemen with Gerald McCoy being the mainstay. in that three-man defensive front. I thought that it did an okay job. I'll tell you what, there's not four quick, fast guys that can get to the quarterback on this defensive line, in my opinion.
No.
I think that you're going to have better success blitzing a Beckwith or an Alexander or a David.
Yes.
And going with this 3-3-5 down the road. I mean, the only thing you're opening yourself up for is a run play. Because you've got one less guy on the defensive line.
I would go with a 1-10.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah, one guy.
I might want to run the ball on that alignment.
Who's McCoy?
Rotate him every other play.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's what they're doing right now at the safety position. They're rotating.
Good
Lord. TJ Ward doesn't like that.
No.
He shouldn't.
No, he does not.
He shouldn't.
And, okay, let's talk about that elephant in the room.
How do we get an elephant in the room?
That's an old expression. It's an old saying.
Right. How do you miss the big elephant in the room? It's kind of, it's
obvious. Young whippersnapper didn't know anything about old
damn
sayings.
Thing about elephants. Go to Busch Gardens, mister.
I haven't been to Busch Gardens in like 10 years.
What?
What?
I haven't been to Busch Gardens
like
in like
10
years.
It's
like
down the road. It's a tremendous value. You get like the Florida Fun Pass.
One, I don't live down the road. So
that's a good point. True. Yeah. It is goes to Sarasota Jungle Gardens.
It's like an hour and a half away from him. Okay. Yeah.
By the way, Busch Gardens, if you're listening, we'd love to have you as a partner with the Pewter Nation podcast.
I'll actually go.
We're giving you a free plug right now.
I'll actually go.
There you go.
Yeah.
So. Well, let's get back to TJ Ward because he was a guy that when he first took the field against the Chicago Bears, made a splash play. It was a big splash signing. A lot of people, yours truly included, thought that this really might be the guy to push them over the top and get them in the playoffs. And I'll tell you what, it's been a little shocking. I know he was hurt against the Minnesota Vikings, but it's kind of surprising how Chris Conte has been playing more than him, and Justin Evans played every single snap last week, or I should say yesterday.
Justin Evans should be playing every snap, though, because he should be playing free safety.
Yes.
The other thing is that they should have a definitive strong safety. I mean, all four guys played. Just because you have... I think that Mike Smith is just getting carried away with this. Oh, we have four guys who know our system.
Right.
You know, they're all working hard
does
at
Seattle,
practice.
Does Seattle do this with Cam Chancellor
and
Little?
No.
Well, you got to remember the Buccaneers did. They took John Lynch out a lot.
No, they didn't.
No?
Nope.
God, I'm just like 0-3 today with stuff. No, I mean, seriously, though. I tweeted this to you guys yesterday, or not tweeted, texted this to you guys yesterday, and I don't know that you necessarily agreed, but if the problem last year was communication, why are you rotating your guys in the back end? Because your safeties are making some of those calls back there.
That's a really good point.
And, I don't understand that at all. I mean, put two guys back there. If somebody's practicing better or if somebody sucks in a game, that's one thing. But just to rotate them because you have four doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
You know, the secondary is similar to the defensive line, that you have to have chemistry.
Asking Mike Smith that question Wednesday.
Yeah, it needs to be asked. It should be asked of Dirk today, too, just to compare the answers. I mean, just because you can't say it's working. You can't say that how many safeties have an interception this year? One, Justin Evans, right? Against the Patriots?
Yeah.
Wasn't he the only one? Okay.
I think so.
You can't say that it's resulting in more big plays and splash plays and takeaways. I don't think you can make that argument. So if what you're doing is rotating guys in and it's not working, why not find the best two guys? And again, I'm with you. Justin Evans is the future at that position. You got to play him. He's one of them.
I think it might be a combination of a lot of things that Mike Smith just might not know how to handle. Like, for example, Justin Evans might be the most talented free safety they have. But when you bring up that point about communication and making the calls on the back end, like some of the like a free safety might do, he might not know how to do that yet.
True.
So he might be the most talented guy, but if he doesn't know how to do that, then all of a sudden it's like Mike Smith might be thinking, okay, well, then I have to have another safety in there who knows how to do it. So Chris Conte's the one who plays. But really, TJ Ward's the better strong safety, so I want to get him in there too.
But he might not be as well-versed.
Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah,
it seems like there might be just this big confusion of one of the safeties is best at this, and then another safety is good at this. But then you have to pair the less safety with the more knowledgeable safety, even though he's not the better safety. And
no,
so all of a sudden, you have this four player rotation on the back end right. that just doesn't make any sense, and it ends up in plays like the one we saw before yeah. where TJ Ward just gets left by himself on a pick play and they score a touchdown.
Right. And Mike Smith even said that they have different skill sets, each one of the guys, that they want to use in different ways. But my whole thing is
that that should
is
be.
You don't know the offensive play.
Right.
You can't sit there and say, well, we're going to have Justin Evans and TJ Ward in on this third down. Okay, are they going to run the ball or are they going to throw the ball? You have no idea.
And, well, let me just throw this out there. Ahmad Black is still a free agent.
As is Major Wright.
Major Wright. True. I mean, bring the Gators back.
We could. Yeah. We could. Reggie Nelson might get cut.
Because the Gator receiver did pretty damn good yesterday.
Yeah. They might know.
Former Gator.
So what you're saying, Mark, I want to get this on record.
Yes.
This team needs more Gators. Is
needs
that what you're saying?
More Gators. They need more Hargraves on this team. So you get the two safeties. You got Hargraves.
You need to
think
loop
of another.
That.
Think of another. Don't isolate that. No.
You need to isolate that and loop that like 10 times.
It's already a soundbite. Yeah.
10 times. Put it on repetition.
What I'm saying is, and let me finish that. This team needs more Gators because I would like to see this team get a top five pick.
I was going
to
say because you want the tank. All right. Yeah, there's the
you know,
no
tank for Chubb or whatever we want to start with.
Yeah.
Bradley Chubb, of course.
Bradley Chubb, State, not
or Nick Chubb.
Nick Chubb's pretty damn good,
they
too.
They could draft
they
both.
Could do,
Bradley Chubb in the first, Nick Chubb in the second.
They're cousins, you know.
Are they?
They are, yeah. They're cousins.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. I don't really know many people
who are
stupid athletic have the last name Chubb.
Yep.
So the safety play, and a couple weeks ago when I was doing some of the cover three work, I was standing for – I mean, Mike Smith likes to say this, like, we're going to be versatile. We're going to make sure offenses don't know what's coming at us. But you don't know what's coming at you because you don't even know who you're playing out there. So safeties, you just have to have definitive roles. You have to realize who your best players are and play them. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, let's give Mike Smith a pass here. I mean, he's a young defensive coordinator.
He's not.
His first year.
He's not.
No?
He's not. He's experienced. Old
damn it, I'm going to quit talking today.
I'll say this, too.
Like, if Justin Evans is your best free safety, play him at free safety.
Mm-hmm.
And you make sure, and this can go into this little culture conversation that we might have here in a second if you want to bring it up, but, like, if he is your best free safety, then you put him at free safety, and you make sure that every night he is doing his homework, making sure that at some point, at least that every week that goes by, he is closer and closer to being the person to call plays on the back end that you need him to be. And if TJ Ward is your best strong safety, if he gives you the best chance to line up against tight ends, to match up in zone coverage, to come up and support the run, then you put him there. I don't care how much you like Chris Conte as a backup guy or how well he has done as a fill-in player for you for the last couple of years. That is great, but this is a game of football, this is a business, and this is wins and losses. If he is not the best player at that position, he doesn't play.
I agree.
Like plain and simple.
Yep.
And I don't think this team is as cutthroat as they need to with that right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I caught some flack. I even had Dirk Koetter not mention me in the press conference, but basically – with the whole ping pong
twice.
And
he did
rap
it on
music,
Monday,
yeah, he did it on Monday, and yeah, he did it there. I was right there in the front row, and I get all that. Listen, playing ping pong and rap music have nothing to do with wins and losses. But I will say this: I don't recall ping pong tables in the locker room or rap music being played during Tony Dungy's era or John Gruden's era. Okay, I'm not doubling down on that. I'm letting that go. But one thing I do want to say is, and we're going to talk about this. We talked about it several months ago on multiple podcasts and multiple radio appearances on 620, a radio partner. This was the most laxed, soft Buccaneer training camp I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
I've covered the Bucs for 24 years.
Yeah, I brought that up. We were watching practice one day, and I was like, no one's hitting anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm going back to –
there's no live tackling
periods.
There was no live contact, no live goal line drills whatsoever. And I'll tell you what, and I wrote about this in my two-point conversion. This offensive line's not getting any push. They're not owning the line of scrimmage in the run game.
Lord, no.
Okay. And part of that is when you're only going at thud tempo in training camp – you're not fostering and developing, you know, that type of mentality and that muscle memory that you're going to need for the season, okay? They're certainly not hitting and tackling and stuff during practice during the season. Hardly any team is because of the attrition. You don't want to get guys hurt for Sunday. You're in the season now. But why is training camp 4 weeks long if you're not going to incorporate those things? If you're not going to do live hitting and tackling drills,
yeah.
And if you're not going to do live goal line
week
periods,
two and three, you got to be hitting, man.
You have to. And again, and Tony Dungy had physical training camp practices. John Gruden had physical training camp practices, and I'm sure Greg Schiano did too, and I'm sure Raheem Morris did as well. My memory serves me in that capacity, so it's not like that is the antidote or the answer. But what I will say is between Dungy and Gruden, there were 7 playoff appearances, 4 division championships, and a Super Bowl. So you can't disqualify that. Right. And I just think, just from the vibe here, and I know Dirk wants a fun environment. Well, fun comes on Sundays when you win. I just don't get the impression that this is the most business-like atmosphere around here. This is not the inmates running the asylum like it was under Raheem Morris.
Sure, right.
But I just don't think that this team is as detail-oriented as it needs to be on Sundays, and that isn't just on Sundays. That has to happen throughout the week.
Yeah.
You can't be perfect in practice and come out and be sloppy in games.
Yeah.
You are, you know, you play how you practice typically.
And you know what? Let's just face it. This is HBO's fault. This team still acts like they're on Hard Knocks and there's no cameras in the locker room. They're still playing it up for the cameras that aren't there. No?
I don't think so.
I don't know about that.
A little bit. Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
I will say this, though. In the locker room, it is funny when I watch, because I'm there every day and I look around, and there are those guys, but this is probably in every locker room. You probably saw that. There's the fun bunch, and then there's the guys, like Jameis Winston, for instance. He comes in, sits at his locker for a little bit, looks at his Surface tablet, yep. Things like that, gets ready and goes out for practice early. You know, and then there's other guys like that. And then there's other guys that want to have a good time. Look, I coach high school football. We had a group, I joke about the fun bunch. We called them the fun bunch because that's what they want to do, goof around, have fun all the time. But they perform. They came through. Yeah. And that's okay. When that happens, you can live with the fun bunch.
Right.
When they're winning, you can live with the ping pong and the music, and you can make this happy, fun, yay, we're this, you know, not take everything so deadly serious type thing if it works. But it's not working. This team is 2-4. And you may be grasping at straws, Scott, by saying no ping pong and no music, but maybe that's a straw you have to grasp.
Something,
because what's it going to hurt? Because it's not – I mean
– it's not helping.
It's not, yeah.
It's not helping right now.
Certainly not.
At some point, like, you have to look at this is a coaching thing, and not just in, like, what they're asking of their players, but, like, go back to the offseason, man. Like, this team got DeSean Jackson. Like, they got Chris Baker. They got O.J. Howard. They went into training camp, and what was Dirk Cutter's number one goal in training camp in the preseason?
Don't get hurt.
Yep. This team got everything they wanted.
Mm-hmm. Guess what?
The whole time.
Guess what?
That's right.
Guess what? When the season starts, players get hurt.
Yeah, you can't avoid that.
I mean, it's going to happen. Right. You just got to pray it's not, you know, ACL for your star quarterback or wide receiver or three technique. But injuries are going to happen.
And I understand. The worst thing that can happen for any team is like the Tannehill injury, right? In training camp.
Sure,
somebody gets hurt.
Right.
They don't even have
Nobody
a chance to play
that.
In week one. I get that. But to me, that's almost playing and coaching scared. Because it just goes to show you at any time. And I remember Davin Joseph got – I think he broke his leg, I want to say, in the practice leading up to the first game of one of the seasons he was here with John Gruden. And, you know, injuries can happen at any point in time. You can tear an ACL without contact. So you can't put these guys in bubble wrap and put them on a shelf and say, okay, we're going to open you guys and unwrap you for week one. If you do that, you're missing out on a lot of the elements of training camp. And I say
what you want about Greg Schiano. His defense did not miss tackles because they spent an inordinate amount of time. It drove us crazy in practice how much time they spent on tackling, rolling those donuts and diving at the ankles. And,
well, tackling,
you
had a tweet yesterday, tackling is what?
It's want to.
It's effort and want to.
I mean, you've got to want to. Vernon Hargreaves did not want to tackle Adrian Peterson last week.
No.
There were guys – now, I will say this, Shady McCoy – and Tyrod Taylor are not the two easiest guys to tackle.
Tough to tackle.
I think
for
there
sure.
was some want to there, but your guy in the middle. I mean, a guy we've been waiting to come back since week one, Quan Alexander.
Rusty.
Worst game I've seen him have. I mean, this guy.
He still had 9 tackles, but yes, he did miss a lot of tackles.
He plays a position that manufactures tackles.
And he was one of the guys that could have stopped that third and 10 there with a minute 45 left. He was one of the first. You had Ayers, then you had Quan come and miss, and then it was Tandy, Hargraves. Then it was Quan, then it was Hargraves, and Justin Evans came up. McCoy came late.
Yeah.
You know.
And even at the beginning of the game, Tyrod Taylor at one point had 50 yards on the ground. Four carries.
Yep.
Okay, like that is not – you can get away with one of those carries being a big one.
Yeah.
The rest of them, 2-3, that's focus, effort. That's those things. That's all it can be. That's all it can be.
And here's one thing I'd love to see, too. Stop with the stunts up front. They're not working, or at least cut them down.
I just don't know what
in regularity, okay? Because a lot of times,
like that to me, they put their linebackers in vulnerable positions when they do that because they've run. I don't know a game this year that I saw them run themselves out of their gaps more than in that game with their stunts and slants. I hate slants maybe more because that's just guessing.
Yeah.
You're just strictly guessing. A stunt, at least you're trying to catch the offensive line off guard.
I'd almost rather see a slant because then at least you have every gap supposedly covered, okay? At least you're saying we're going to slant to the left or slant to the right.
I don't know if I do that with a guy who is a cutback running back like Shady McCoy, though. That's the wrong guy that you run a lot of slants
But when you
against.
Have a mobile quarterback, and God help you, if they do it again this week, Cam Newton's going to rush for between 50 to 70 yards. If they keep stunting, and their stunts take forever, and when the defensive tackles
they bring
cross
to the middle too,
they open up running lanes. And if you're not going to have a dedicated spy, which they really did not against Tyrod Taylor,
they didn't.
You're just inviting
when we complained about Mike Smith not going man a lot, and there were times on third down when they went man coverage. And ran verticals,
which
left it wide open for Tyrod Taylor to get through there. There was nobody in the middle whatsoever.
You know when they didn't go main coverage? On the 44-yard pass to Thompson down the sideline at the end of the game.
Zone, yeah.
Did we figure out which linebacker didn't pick up the wheel route? Dirk didn't want to answer that. I didn't go back.
I haven't looked at the all 22 yet, but what it looks like it was is obviously cover three or quarters, and that's McClain's zone. So
Dirk said
he had the deep and he followed his guy because he was deep, but it was literally the perfect timing and great play
Dirk said there was a linebacker that had to be, which again, is that the best call in the world when you've got a linebacker covering a receiver who hasn't stopped?
I'm going to guess
I'll
it's Beckwith.
It's one of the guys, but I don't know if I'm, because defensive coordinators will always tell you like, somebody should have had him.
Yeah.
But I mean, in reality, like, if you call a zone and they perfectly time it to where the zone is open and they hit the throw, I mean, you can sit there and be like, oh, you should have had it all you want.
Yeah, there's always holes
in zones. On a wheel route, shouldn't there be somebody that designated to pick up somebody that runs the wheel?
If the linebackers are doing like a, hey, you have the guy in the backfield, and then if he blocks, you're a blitzer or something. So, if it's like a mix – maybe, but I don't know. I have to go see it. Maybe one of the linebackers might have just totally blown it. So I don't know. I can't remember though.
Well, I mean, where does this team go from here? They're 2-4. I'm going
to
be mentioning this.
2-5.
I'm going to be mentioning this in my Fab Five. There's never been a Buccaneer team that has recovered from 2-4.
That's not true.
It's true.
No. Super Bowl team was 2-7.
No, they were not.
No.
Nope.
No.
You were striking out.
I should have stayed home.
Awfully today.
What do you mean recovered? Like just to make the playoffs
or even 8-8? I mean, it pretty much guarantees, at least in Tampa Bay Buccaneer history, and I would say probably for most of the league, yes, it guarantees an awful season.
2-4 or 2-5?
2-4.
That's not
2-4. Now, here's the thing. At 2-3, believe it or not, in 1999, the 99 Buccaneers started off 2-3, but they won that sixth game and they got to 3-3.
Yeah.
And then that was a catalyst because I think that was the season where they won five games in a row.
Right.
And got to 11-5 and the NFC Championship game.
Beat the Rams and went to the Super Bowl.
No.
No?
No. Ricky Prohl.
Not doing well.
Yeah.
Ricky Prohl.
They beat them 11-5, right?
It was a baseball score. I think it was 11-5.
Yeah.
Bert Emanuel.
That's ugly.
That was a great catch he made. And you know, they tried to change the rule after that. That wouldn't be a catch after that, but it was a catch.
You're actually right. That was a catch, yes. Most Buccaneers fans will agree with you, yes.
Yeah. No, and literally they did change the rule after that.
Yeah.
But it didn't help the Buccaneers that year.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Herculean task is overcoming history. And by the way, there was Greg Schiano team. I believe there was a John Gruden team that started off 2-4. I want to say Tony Dungy's 1998 team finished 8-8. No, but they start off 2-3, and they actually got to 3.
There are different ways you could look at it, right? Because on one hand, you could say, hey, they're 2-4, but the rest of the NFC South doesn't look great. And, yes. You know, they have all of their division games coming up, which they could make all of those up. And then you could just, you know, you could admit, you know, there are some things that they did a little bit better this week. And you realize that the NFL is a week-to-week league, and every game starts 0-0, and
nine,
crazy
nine
things
and
happen.
9-7 could win this division, you know, as so, crazy and, as it sounds. Hell, we go eight, back to
hell,
2010.
Hell, 8-8 might win this division. I don't
when,
know.
When the NFC West division winners were 7-9. Remember that?
The Carolina Panthers were 7-8-1.
Yeah, something
right?
like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, when they made it. So I, like, there is still hope there, but you know, as Mark and I were kind of talking about earlier before we came on the podcast.
You mean before Scott got here?
Before I got here.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like news to me. Go ahead, tell me.
Yeah. So
when you look at this team and the way that they have played 2-4, what makes you think that they're going to go on this run?
That's the thing.
To make it possible.
Yeah.
Because I don't see a lot.
Right.
And if they are to string together, you know, 3 wins for every 4 games they play for the rest of the year, or whatever it has to be, there is going to be a drastic change. And you know, if that even comes to pass, there are going to be fans who have been positive throughout this whole thing who are going to be like, "See, I told you they could have turned around." And I would have been like, You did not see anything in those first crop of games that made you think that whatever. So if
no,
it is going
I,
to happen,
I, see, I disagree with that.
See, you disagree with it because you picked 12-4 for the record,
and they
you're
will.
Saying
yeah,
that
they will.
Win 10.
Yeah, they're going to win 10 in a row. No, but seriously, this team is a shitty field goal kicker. Did I say shitty? I probably shouldn't say
you
that.
Did,
you might have
you
to
did.
Cut
it's
that
okay.
out.
Okay.
But
or we can leave it in just
okay.
for this one time.
This is the PG-13 version of the Peter Nation podcast. Exactly. But they are a crappy field goal kicker. And a blown coverage in the secondary yesterday from being a 4-2 football team.
But at what point?
19 points. 19 points against Tom Brady. That tells me that this team can play better than they have.
But
can be
point,
better.
At what point does this team actually just start playing to their talent every week?
Well, I'll say this: we've got dissension in that locker room right now, and everybody's saying it's a ship taking on water, and that's probably the case. But it could turn around the other way. It could also be a rallying type cry of guys saying, "I'm tired of this garbage."
Well, okay, what do you guys think here?
Screw even the coach. We for players are going to start playing for ourselves.
Because I think that's a good thing.
You know.
Because we're 6 weeks in and this team has no. Like, for example, what you just said about the Patriots held Tom Brady 19 points. What was that, 3 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. What was that?
Yeah.
3 weeks ago, we were like, hey, this defense doing what they need to do. They just held Tom freaking Brady to 19 points. Here we are 3 weeks later, and we go, this defense is god-awful. How do we get rid of these pieces?
Right. Well,
so that all changes.
If you're looking for a common denominator, the defense is garbage on the road. It really is.
Yeah.
They gave up 34 points at Minnesota, 38 points at Arizona.
Yeah, jeez.
73 yesterday.
73 points yesterday.
Yeah.
So – but when you look at what happens at home against the Chicago Bears, they got a pick six. They held the Bears to 7 points. It was almost a shutout thanks to Deontay Thompson. It was not. They did a reasonable job against Eli Manning. Mm-hmm. I think that if you remember that game, the Bucs start off, should have been 17-0 to start with. They missed an extra point, missed a field goal. Instead, it was 13-0. That allowed Eli Manning to come back a little bit. They did a pretty good job against Tom Brady. But in order for them to play complementary football, and that's the term that Dirk, you know, adheres to, this offense has got to do a better job starting faster and getting points on the board, because that would help the defense more than anything. And when you look at the scoring, the offense has put up 47 points in the first half of these games and 89 points in the second half. They're scoring almost twice as many points in the second half of games as they are in the first half.
What does a team do when they get ahead? Typically,
play
offensively.
Prevent defense.
No.
They run the ball.
They run the ball.
Yeah.
What do the Buccaneers have trouble doing?
Run the ball.
So if the Buccaneers get ahead, teams have to do what?
Throw the ball.
So that means they're not going to?
Run the ball.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does.
But you know what? I saw signs yesterday. First of all, at halftime, I tweeted out 6 freaking points. 6 points.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
It is.
But at the same time, I lost my train of thought. Oh, I'm saying I saw signs yesterday of this offense starting to really catch its groove.
They did. They changed some things.
If they do that, that's great. But Dirk, I think Dirk's got to be even more aggressive. And I jokingly said they should never punt again when they cross the 50, but I'm not really even joking a whole lot. The percentages, statistic-wise, at least in college football, because one of the Florida State websites put this up, when you get to the 40-yard line and you bog down and you end up punting from there.
You mean the opponent's 40.
The opponent's, right. Yes.
The net yardage you give up.
It's negligible as far as scoring on the next drive by the offense.
Right. So, and what you're doing is basically you're saying we can't get 2 yards, but we're going to help our defense out by giving them a plus 20 is really what it is.
Right.
And if your defense is the worst part of your team, that doesn't make much sense.
One play?
If you can't get 2 yards, I think that's where it all starts. That's what the part of the cover three was on the other week. It's like they can get into 3 and 2, and then all of a sudden Charles Sims is in the game, and it's like, okay, well, you're obviously terrified to run the ball.
Right.
So
We saw another bad example of a third and short yesterday that you kind of pointed out a couple weeks ago, like you said in your cover three, on that long cross the field throw to Cameron Bray. You're telling me on 3rd and 2 or 3rd and 3, whatever it is, that's the best play call you got?
Yep. I mean, and here's what I don't understand.
Literally, you got to go 2 yards, but you're trying to throw the ball 17 yards in the air to get that completion. Maybe not 17.
Atlanta on a 3rd and, I think it was a 3rd and 3 last night, just ran a mesh concept with Julio Jones in the slot, and I think Taylor Gabriel on the other side, and they just ran a quick mesh.
Right.
Went to Julio because he was wide open, because mesh concepts like that are always wide open for 3 yards, and I think I really screamed watching the TV.
It's essentially a rub play. It's a pick play.
Yes! Yes! You can't stop it!
Right. But here's the thing. Why?
Oh, wait. We saw a slant to Mike Evans yesterday.
I did see that.
What happened?
I smiled.
4 yards? He ends up getting 12 on it? Holy cow.
I smiled.
Anyway, Dirk listens to this podcast.
You know, Charles Sims, I'm fine with putting him in on 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, whatever, because he might be the better pass protector than Doug Martin. I get that. But if it's 3rd and 2, and maybe I do want to spread, you know, the defense out by going 4 wides, but I'm not going to be having Charles Sims in there if I'm Cutter anymore. I'm going to be having Doug Martin, because Doug Martin, this offensive line is really doing him no favors. He is creating a lot. And you put this up in the Pro Football Focus Monday morning hit.
Mm-hmm.
The Doug Martin created most of his own yards yesterday.
Yes.
On his own. And
so, he still can.
Yeah, and so that's my point, is if you can sit there and do a draw to him and let him, you know, find the opening, you know, give him a little bit of vision there to, you know, to find the open hole and dive ahead for 2 yards. I think that is a higher probability, depending on the defensive front, obviously, but that's a higher probability than trying to throw a 15-yard pass on 3rd and 2.
I prefer a toss sweep to Jacquizz Rodgers in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, we all would.
No.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him get creative and do like a fullback toss to Luke Stocker.
Better yet, how about like a triple reverse where they just keep running behind the line of scrimmage and hand
somebody,
the ball off each
somebody
other?
Somebody said something
about Bernard reading the Wildcat.
About the offense. Oh, it was something with Charles Sims. Oh, it was that drive where Charles Sims was in the game for like 7 straight snaps. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And somebody I tweeted about it, and somebody said they're setting up a play for him, and I was like, yeah, triple option flea flicker's coming next.
Right.
Like, so I don't really know what play you're setting up. But.
Okay, if there's one page out of the playbook we can just rip up and just burn, it's the wheel route to Charles Sims, right? That's not going to happen.
I mean, it works every time.
No, it does not.
Well,
60% of the time it works 100% of the time.
No, it does not.
No?
It doesn't work.
It does not work. It has not worked all year.
No, it worked one time, but Jameis overthrew it. Oh, that's what you're saying. Jameis overthrows it.
That's what I'm saying.
It worked yesterday, and he overthrew it.
Yeah, I know.
But he was getting pressured on that. Whatever, man. Okay, sorry.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the podcast. And listen, as bad as it gets, remember, Buck fans, you could be Browns fans.
Oh, yeah.
Or 49ers fans.
Or you could have bet a lot of money on Oklahoma beating K-State.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
It didn't really work out. I was so pissed. Because
one game you guys come to play.
I know, right? It's like we actually had the lead at halftime, and I'm thinking that this is one of those win-win situations.
Right.
I'm either going to watch Kansas State win, and that's the best $20 I've spent, or I'm going to make, you know, $20 in this game.
Right.
And it neither happened because K-State lucked out in getting a cheap touchdown at the very end, and Oklahoma had to win by 14.
When's the last time the Bucs made the playoffs? What year was it?
2008.
Okay.
2007.
I was looking up some like just some playoff statistics.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills haven't made it since '99.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like
that changes this year.
Like Bucs
they're well
fans,
on their way.
Bucks fans get and I understand why Bucks fans would be frustrated about things, and they should be frustrated about it. Even like the culture, when you look at, you know, yeah, like at what they've had to root for over the last couple of years, or even since the Super Bowl era, blah blah blah. But they are far from the only team in the NFL that is like this.
But I think where Bucks fans get agitated is they see Andy Reid go to Kansas City,
yeah,
and all of a sudden, Chiefs take off.
You're right.
See a brand new coach in Sean McDermott go to Buffalo, and boom, they beat the Buccaneers. You know, so
but those guys are special because it doesn't happen a lot.
Well, let me
NFL's
ask you this though, Scott: Buccaneers are 2-4. Can you find a place where you could bet on the Buccaneers still making the playoffs at this point?
I would hazard a guess that mybookie.ag might entertain that.
I think they probably would.
Yeah. So, and you can also bet on the Buccaneers, bet against them, bet on any type of college, football, NFL, NBA, NHL action. You can bet in the World Series. It's where we do our gaming, mybookie.ag. They're the most professional gaming website out there. They give you the fastest payouts. Within 2 business days, the money is credited into your account. And I'm just having an awful lot of fun betting college football. Even though I got my clock cleaned by my alma mater on Saturday, I still ended up winning about $25 in some other games. So I am what you would call a wussy bettor. I only bet usually in $5 or $10 increments, but it's fun. It's more fun than fantasy football because I don't have to sit there and log on and find out, you know, am I the 7,000th person in this contest and I'm going to win $2 or whatever. No, I just pick the winners and the losers. I can bet on the money line. There's a lot of different in-game betting you can do. You can bet first quarter. You can bet halftime. Go to mybookie.ag, and when you do go there, you can use the word pewter, P-E-W-T-E-R. They will match your initial deposit 100%. So if you put in $200, they're going to give you another $200. Now you got $400 to gamble with. So mybookie.ag, tell them pewterreport.com and the Pewter Nation podcast sent you. Use the promo code pewter, and they will match your initial deposit.
Very good. Make sure to go check out mybookie.ag, which somebody asked me, what does the AG mean? Afghanistan? I said no, and I typed it in, and it works perfectly fine.
Yes.
So just go there. Just trust us. And anyway, very reputable, and they'll do you right for sure.
Bucks are at 80-1 odds, by the way.
Oh.
80-1.
80-1.
There you go. I know where I'm putting my 20 this week. You know,
rich,
I bet when I went
rich
to
man,
Vegas, I bet Buccaneers making it to the Super Bowl.
You did.
It was 25-1, which was I shouldn't have bet that. That's not great odds anyway. So yeah. I win $250 on $10. But anyway, I think I'm gonna put some money on this deal here because again, I predicted 12-4, and it's not. It's still possible.
It is.
It absolutely still possible. Anyway, we appreciate everybody listening. We appreciate all the feedback. Share the podcast. Also, share your comments and thoughts. Tell us what we can do better. What you like. What you don't like. Or just tell us what you like, because we really don't care what you don't like. Not true. We actually were discussing that before the show started today, some of your suggestions, so we appreciate that. Anyway, I'm Mark Cook for Scott Reynolds and Trevor Sikkema, and we'll see you later in the week with another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.